ಜನ ವಲ್ಲಭಗಿರಿ ವರಧಾರಿ ಯಶೋದನಂದನ ಬ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ ಯಶೋದನಂದನ ಬ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ ಜಯ ರಾಧಮಾದವ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರಿ ಜಯ ಜಯ ರಾಧಮಾದವ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರಿ ಜನ ವಲ್ಲಭ ಗಿರಿ ವರದಾರಿ ಗೋಪಿ ಜನ ವಲ್ಲಭ ಗಿರಿ ವರದಾರಿ ಯಶೋದನಂದನ ಬ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ ಯಶೋದನಂದನ ಬ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ ಯಮುನಾ ತೀರ ಬನಚಾರಿ ಚಾರಿ ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರಿ 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 ರಾಮ 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 ಹರಿ 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 ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರಿ 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 ರಾಮ 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 ಹರಿ ಹರಿ ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರಿ 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 ರಾಮ 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 ಹರಿ ಹರಿ ಹರಿ
ಜಯ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀ ರಾಧ ಮಾಧವ ಕೀ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀ ಕಿಶೋರ್ ಕಿಶೋರ್ ಕೀ
ಶ್ರೀಮದ್ ಭಾಗವತಂ ಫೋರ್ತ್ ಕ್ಯಾಂಟೋ ಚಾಪ್ಟರ್ 28 ಪುರಂಜನ ಬಿಕಮ್ಸ್ ಅ ವುಮನ್ ಇನ್ ದ ನೆಕ್ಸ್ಟ್ ಲೈಫ್ ಟುಡೇ ಟೆಕ್ಸ್ಟ್ 45 ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Ajanati Priyatamam Yaduparatamanganam Sustirasanam Asadhya Yatapurvam Upacharat Ajanati Priyatamam Yaduparatamanganam Sustirasanam Asadhya Yata Purvam Upacharat. Vaishnavis. Ajanati, without any knowledge. Priyatamam, her dearmost husband. Yada, when. Uparatam, passed away. Angana, the woman. Sustira, fixed up. Asanam, on the seat. Asadhya, going up to. Yata, as. Purvam, before. Upacharat, went on serving him. Translation: the daughter of King Vidarbha continued as usual to serve her husband, who was seated in a steady posture, until she could understand that he had passed away from the body. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. It appears that the queen did not even talk to her husband while serving. She would simply perform as her prescribed duties without talk. Thus, she did not stop rendering service until she could ascertain that her husband had passed from the body. Om Gyanati Viranda Syaganandana Salaka Chakshirum Maritamina Tasmeshi Vivinam. Namam Vishnavadaya Krishna Vasayapadaraya Shimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Thinamini Namaste Saraswati Devi Guruvani Vishadene Vishwasasvamivadi Vaschatya Dishadarini Anshakalpatra Vishya Kripa Sindhu Vachapadam Vishnav Benamunam. Translation again, if you like to repeat. The daughter of King Vidarbha continued as usual to serve her husband, who was seated in a steady posture. Until she could ascertain that he had passed away from the body. This verse gives us a picture of this realization of the Vaidarbhi realizing that finally her husband has left the body. And in this case, it was a very smooth transition. Basically, the husband was in a very deep meditation, and she kept serving him, massaging his feet. And in the next verse, it will be described how she saw, perceived that the feet had become cold, and therefore the soul was not anymore in the body. So this is the moment of realization of that fact. Now, you'll see in the next few verses, there will be a lot of emotion, there will be a lot of crying. But there is just the moment of realization. So, Srila Prabhupada explains that the Vaidarbhi, she represents the disciple, and the king, that he, her husband, represents the guru. So, Srila Prabhupada elaborates in these verses about the guru leaving the body, the disciple's mood, the disciple's anguish, affliction about seeing that the guru leaves this world. And it also introduces the idea of serving in separation, serving the form of the guru in vapu, vapu seva, serving the guru directly, physically, in the sense of serving is either his bodily requirements or serving him in form of a picture, but you know, the physical aspect of the seva, vapu seva. And of course the vani seva, serving the instruction, which as we learn is the most important part, is the first of all is permanent and also is the deeper part. In ISKCON we have experience now of many spiritual masters, or at least several spiritual masters leaving the body. First of all, those who were around have seen Srila Prabhupada departure from this body. And then there have been other departures, like Srila Guru Govinda Maharaj, Srila Tamakrishna Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj, and others. And so we do have a sense of this experience as a society. And in general, we can see that many devotees, most devotees, we could say, remain fixed in the service. Of course, there is this natural feeling of affliction, natural feeling of separation. At the beginning, perhaps even a sense of being lost, having lost one's most dear friend and well-wisher. But we have seen that, I don't know the exact statistics, I mean, we didn't make a study, but those who want to remain fixed, they can remain fixed. And those who don't want to remain fixed, they don't remain fixed even when the spiritual master is alive. Like we have seen with Srila Prabhupada. Sometimes devotees left the movement. Sometimes even there was that secretary Purushottam, Prabhu Purushottam Das, who had been, was serving Srila Prabhupada, but somehow he developed some doubt and he left the movement from being the secretary of Srila Prabhupada directly. So association is a great help. The physical presence of the guru on the planet is a great help, and it's a great sense of relief, and it's a great sense of shelter, and it's a great point of reference. At the same time, we have seen that those who wanted to remain fixed, they remain fixed. We have seen it. We have seen in some cases they actually expand their service. They come to more maturity. We've seen it in with Srila Prabhupada. Some disciples were very young when Srila Prabhupada left the world, but they remained steady, they remained fixed, they took on more responsibility, they expanded greatly their service to Srila Prabhupada. And we've seen also with the other spiritual masters. So this is, in one sense, could say sociologically and spiritually, it's a very positive sign. It's a very positive sign that people can actually, it's not pleasant, but in one sense it's natural. Just like in normal life, it's natural that the son experiences the death of his father. That's a generally the natural course of events. So it's also natural that the disciple experiences the departure of a spiritual master in normal circumstances. Of course, there is also the other experience that the spiritual master experienced the departure of his disciple, the physical departure, the death of his disciple. Like for instance, Srila Prabhupada experienced the departure of Jayananda Prabhu. And many spiritual masters, present spiritual masters, they experience the death of their disciple, which is kind of unusual. But it's kind of usual, just like the son and the father. Generally, the father is what, 25, 30 years older than the son. So in the normal course of life, he will live before the son. So the guru generally is older than the disciple. And therefore, generally, he will leave the world before. And just like here, Vidarbhi, the daughter of King Vidarbha, is experiencing, many devotees will experience that in their life. And so it's another phase. Of course, one thing we can learn is that when the spiritual master is present, we need to take as much as an opportunity to serve and also to have some personal association or ask questions. Because, of course, once he's gone, there's no more opportunity at least to have that direct exchanges. So, in one sense, of course, one should take as much as possible the opportunity. At the same time, it's also a question of developing a habit, developing a taste for the vani, or the instructions of the guru. Some devotees have a very healthy habit to listening to lectures, and so they are in touch. No, it's the same vibration that stays with us, the instructions. And the disciple who is successful in imbibing those instructions is then will be successful in his spiritual life. And in fact, we have seen again with Srila Prabhupada, some devotees have very little association. And some devotees of Srila Prabhupada, some disciples of Srila Prabhupada, they never even saw Srila Prabhupada. They never met him physically. They took initiation through representative, by letter. I know, for instance, in Italy, at least one or two devotees, they are Srila Prabhupada disciples that never met Srila Prabhupada. But we have seen that some of them, they remain very fixed. And some of those even who have a lot of association with Srila Prabhupada, they may experience some turbulence in their journey. So these are a few considerations. Any question on this topic? Yes. Maybe we can wait for the mic.
The significance of it, Srila Prabhupada mentioning that Vidarbhi never spoke to our husband when serving.
Uh-huh.
Is there any significance to that?
Well, in this case, it seems that the practice of yoga that this King Malayadvaja it was a bit of a, like a mystic yoga in the form, no? It was like a Astanga yoga. He says, King beside the super soul. So it seems that this particular practice of, see, it says, in this way he stayed immovable in one place for 100 years. Like that. So it was kind of a very introspective type of yoga. And therefore, in that particular case, the wife speaking with him would have been a disturbance. Because he was saying in a sitting posture, he was in an asana, was meditating on Paramatma. And so, like, talking with him would have been improper. So, not that, obviously, we cannot take it literally that the disciple should serve without ever speaking. Of course, the disciple shouldn't speak out of turn, should speak when it's appropriate, like that. But we cannot take it literally. For the particular type of yoga that King Malayadvaja was observing, the service was appropriate, like in a silent, was centered on the concentration, on silence, and like that. Anything else?
Thanks a lot for the lecture. It's a general question. Can I ask what she's...
If you like.
Is it okay?
We could do a time.
I heard that you have one of your services is to help ISKCON congregation grow. We hear from many devotees that there are things happening in ISKCON, and like I heard recently in lecture that a lot of the devotees are neophytes here. And we hear a similar analysis from many devotees. A
lot of the devotees here are neophytes.
No.
They didn't catch you. Can you speak in the mic, just like this?
So in general, for devotees to go from neophyte stage to a more advanced stage, so are there any general steps or guidelines?
In particular to the congregation or in general?
In general, for a moment. To grow?
Yes, of course. I mean, I think everybody here knows those steps, no? We practice bhakti yoga, we practice chanting the holy name, Shravanam, Kirtan, Vishnu, Smaranam, I mean, we all know these things. And as seriously as we do, more seriously we do, more we advance, more we purify. So it depends on doing the activities, and doing them as intensely and as seriously as possible. We all know the process. We get up in the morning. And again, this is universal, independently of if you live in a temple or if you live outside, or even if you live in a place where there is no temple. There are thousands of devotees in the world who live in countries where there is no temple because of the political situation of the... they cannot have a temple. So, what to speak of living in a temple. And the vast majority of devotees live outside the temple. So, the process is universal. You get up early in the morning, ideally you take advantage of Brahma Murta, you chant your japa, 16 rounds, then you take only prasadam, Krishna prasadam. Then you spend some time during the day reading books, Shravanam. It can be in the Bhagavatam class, in Bhagavad Gita class, it can be personal reading. Some devotees take courses, Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vaibhava, online courses. Some devotees listen to the books, the lectures. So there's some practice of listening to the philosophy, listening to the message and the instructions. And then we engage in devotional service. For somebody, maybe like a full-time engagement, like at the temple, maybe pujari from morning to night, or book distributors many hours a day. And some who have other duties, which may not be directly in the realm of Shravanam Kirtan, that they do those duties, they do those occupations, and then in the free time they should absorb in Krishna consciousness. They should absorb in association of devotees, they can preach, and so on. And so, Srila Prabhupada says in the Nectar of Instruction, just in the introduction of the Nectar of Instruction, that the spiritual advancement depends on the attitude of the follower. So if one wants to advance, really wants to advance, there's no real obstacle. No? Devotional service, haituki apratyata, doesn't depend on external conditions. So I'm not sure if I got your question, because I mean, I'm sure you know these things.
So my question is this. For example, we hear in Nectar of Devotion of different angas, but see, for example, it says residing in Vrindavan, and then is it okay to just think that, okay, there are different devotees who interpret it in different ways. Of course, the best way is to live in the temple full time. So how important are these steps?
But who said that this is the best way to live in a temple full time? Who said?
I'm saying that, that's my understanding, sorry. I'm sorry.
To live in the temple full time, it's a great opportunity. It's a great privilege, no doubt whatsoever. But there are cases in which may not be the best. I give you an example. I have a god brother. He was grihasta. He is a grihasta. He was living in the Middle East, a Muslim country. He started just, him and his wife was just alone. Him and his wife. They're from India. And they started preaching. He was working for a bank, as a IT in the bank, was taking care of the whole thing. And then they started preaching. He brought different devotees. He brought up to 80 devotees. He made 80 devotees. Then they shifted to, say, the Bhakti Viksha system. And they started multiply. They built up like more than 3,000 devotees in about 15 years. And he asked his spiritual master, Japtaka Maharaj, he asked, I want to go and live near the temple. Maybe not in the temple because it was grass, but just next to the temple in Bangalore. That was he, where he's from. So he was even in the process of buying a house just next to the temple. So he could be all day in the temple, whatever, be the program in the temple for Mongol Arte. And his spiritual master told him no. Told him, you are doing a great service here, you're making hundreds and thousands of devotees, and you're leading them. This is more important than going near and do some service in the temple. Just like Srila Prabhupada himself, he was living in the Radha Dhamodar temple in Vrindavan. He was living in Vrindavan. In Vrindavan was living in the Radha Dhamodar temple, was the temple of Srila Jiva Goswami, just near the Samadhi of Rupa Goswami. So what better place, better temple could be? But he left Vrindavan. He left Vrindavan and he did the service to Vrindavan. He was always going to Delhi for printing books, then he went to Mumbai, then he went to America, came to America. He was not living in a temple. If you read the both the Lilamrita, but also this new book, Miracle on Second Avenue, gives more details. He was living in the Bowery. The Bowery is known as the most degraded place basically in the whole America or in the whole world. In fact, he was living in the place, Mukunda Maharaj explained, when he enters in this place, in the Bowery, you could smell urine, vomit. That's where Srila Prabhupada was living. So, yes, living in a temple could be a great, it is a great opportunity for full absorption, but better to live outside and do some particular service than and please the spiritual master than live in the temple, maybe being a little shaky or distracted. Or, or. So it is a great opportunity, but it's not necessarily the best for everyone. Okay? Like we have preachers, who could live in the temple, say sannyasis, could live in the temple. If they really wanted, they could stay in the temple or just move from temple to temple, but they go in an area where there is no temple. No? Or they spend time, let's say Bhaktivaibhav Maharaj, he spends time in Mongolia. There's no temple there. But obviously, but it seems that Srila Prabhupada will be very pleased to him. He goes some places with very little atmosphere of the temple, but that's his service. I just wanted to make a point, clarify this point, okay? So, you have to go on, if you don't feel too intimidated.
Answering the question, but I think my point was about neophytes like me. It's like I didn't mean to say that everyone should stay in the temple.
Okay.
For someone like me, even to preach and make devotees, he must be a really very advanced devotee, right? So,
not necessarily. I mean, we are instruments. Preach, but there are many types of preaching. Basically, there may be some preaching which is maybe specialized, you need special knowledge, maybe college preaching or scientific preaching. But not necessarily one has to be very advanced if that's it's an area of expertise. And second, preaching, what's more powerful than preaching, like going in Harinam, no, or going and do book distribution? You're giving the Bhagavatam to people. That's a very solid preaching. Like Srila Prabhupada said, what your 3 minutes of preaching will do. But if you give him a book, it can turn his life. No? You give a book to somebody, he got, 1,000 pages of preaching by Srila Prabhupada. So you don't have to be extremely advanced to that. And make devotees. I mean, what does it mean, make devotees? You present the message, you present it as pure as possible, you care, you cultivate people, and then it's their choice. We are instruments. I mean, I don't see it as a principle that only one who is extremely advanced can preach. Is in one sense, those who are not advanced, they should really be involved in preaching because that's the way they advance. And then the result is up to Krishna. I have one experience. I don't think I ever made any devotee, but I have an experience. I remember many years ago, I was in the movement since about one year I was in the movement, and I remember we happened to be in a temple, we were in the Sankirtan traveling party, and we happened to be in a temple where nobody was there, in the temple of Rome, Italy, because the deity was being moved to another place, so we kind of went to the temple and we started running the Sunday program. We were just our Sankirtan party. And I remember one day I was just sitting in, new guy, 1 year in the movement, what do I know? One day I was just answering some question and answer in the, it was like a reception with 10, 12 people, no? Just question and answer. I don't think it was anything special what I said. But then later on, a couple of years later, one devotee came up to me and said, "You made me devotee." And I didn't even remember him. I didn't remember his face. But he gave me the credit. He just said, because I remember I was there and you were preaching and you made me a devotee. But I didn't do it, really. I didn't even notice him. The paper was just normal question and answer. Somehow he felt attracted. He was in the right moment of his development. Somehow it was a very teachable moment. And he got some message. Whatever I said, I don't remember even the topics. So it's not a rule. You have to be extremely advanced. Because the message is powerful. Like Srila Prabhupada will give the example of the little Saraswati, the daughter of Shyamasundara and Malati. She was 3 years old. And she will stop people with a little finger. She will point and say, "Do you know who is Krishna?" And they say, "No." "Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God." And Srila Prabhupada said, this is preaching. Whatever she learned from proper source, she's repeating. She may not have a very deep theological, academic understanding, but whatever she received, she preached. I was in Los Angeles about 10 days ago, and Rama Pad Maharaj gave the class, and he was telling about the times of the Harinam in Boston, Boston Commons. There are still some pictures of those Harinams. And he was saying how they were going all day, and one day, one time they had the son of Ravindra Sahu Prabhu was, I believe, 11 year old, and he was in the Vrindavan Gurukul. What's his name? Yudhisthir. And he had a break, a vacation, summer break, so he was in Boston, and he would go every day in Harinam. And because it's very attractive to listen the philosophy from a child, actually the devotees would let him preach to the public. So this Yudhisthir, 11-year-old, when the Harinam will stop, he will start speaking, and speaking very heavily, no? "You're wasting the human form of life. You should become God conscious." And Rama Prabhupada Maharaj was saying how there were three times generally the crowd that will form was three times bigger. And they were all nodding. "Yeah, yeah, it's right. It's right." So if an adult, normal adult would say that, the people would probably feel challenged or confrontational. But now a child was saying, very heavy preaching, very direct preaching, they were not doing that. Yeah, it's true, like that. So, I don't know, it may have been very advanced, I don't know. But the point is that we are instruments, we present the message, and it's up to the people to accept, isn't it? So you were saying about the neophytes. What about the neophytes? You see that movement is infested with neophytes. Huh? Huh? What you were saying?
Gives us a picture where all the devotees are in Vrindavan, and it's more... It's like for example, if I have to...
All the devotees are in Vrindavan, in the nectar of devotion.
Give me... I'm sorry for putting my questions in a very foolish and amateurish way, but...
No, I like to put you in an embarrassed situation. Don't worry. I'm joking. I'm trying to point out, because, see, when you speak, there are certain assumptions that come true. So I'm trying to clarify. Okay, please go ahead. I won't interrupt until you finish.
Yeah. So when we read nectar of devotion, we get an impression that, we get one kind of impression where we should try to focus more on internalizing Krishna consciousness and developing more devotion. And there are also specific instructions that it's actually an offense to preach to someone who is not, instruct someone who is not interested in devotion service, and then they're offensing his holy name. But then, Prabhupada directly instructs that preaching is the best service and that's our business. So, and part of it is where we have so many devotees coming, because each of us, even if we are just a starting neophyte, we try to bring many devotees along with us, and that's the context I'm referring to. I'm not saying that those who are advanced or not. So that's the context I'm...
See, first of all, that offense to the holy name, which is to instruct the faithless people about the glories of the holy name, that refers specifically and exclusively to the esoteric aspects of the theology of the Holy Name. Because if you tell something, some glories of the Holy Name that they are so beyond their limited understanding, they may disregard them, that they may discard them, they may reject them. Like if you say this Holy Name is none different than God, then it's too hard for them to catch it. So that's an offense. First of all, I would say it's one of the minor offenses. It's not a major offense. In other words, there is a leeway to see. I mean, you can try if he's faithless or not. How do you know if he's faithless or not? I mean, first of all. So, first of all, it's just specifically not to tell about the glories. But there is never an offense to engage people in chanting Hare Krishna. That's never an offense. Can be anybody, the worst butchers in the world. You can say, okay, let's chant. These are names of God, Hare Krishna, Hare Rama. These are names of God. Please, let's chant. So that's not an offense. But if you start trying to make them understand the Holy Name, the power of the Holy Name, that one Holy Name can destroy all sins, that's too much for them. And therefore, you may confuse them. But if you say, this is the Holy Name of the Lord in Sanskrit, let's sing, let's pray for the mercy of the Lord, to be engaged in His service, this is purifying, that's not an offense. Okay? So that offense is very specific and very exclusive to those areas. And then, neophyte, what neophyte means? I mean, it would be nice to have a dictionary. Neophyte means one who is new, right? It's not a negative term. I mean, we may use it as an insult. You neophyte. No. but neophyte, as far as I understand the English, means one who is new in certain things. So there's nothing bad, like a new college student. Nothing bad. Just he arrived now, he's studying, maybe he's a very good student. And sometimes, you know, maybe it's better than all the students. So, I don't know what's your definition of neophyte. Sometimes neophytes means people who come to the movement, we don't know where they come from. They may have done so much service in the previous lives, and they're just reconnecting. So, in a chronological sense, we may say, oh, these are neophytes, they're new, only 6 months in the movement. That's 6 months in this life. In the previous life, it might have been 60 years in the movement. There are many people who don't make it, but they continue, and they just take a Bhagavad Gita explained, no? The yogi continues. So, who is a neophyte, who is not a neophyte, we don't know. And we need to be very careful. Because, one may be 20 years in the movement, but one may have much more devotional service in the previous life than him. So for those who are senior, you should be very careful, because you never know who steps inside the door. Maybe somebody steps today, Sunday program, first time, maybe first time in this life. But he might have been a sannyasi in the previous life, who had some desire, and he was born in Chicago to experience some aspect of Maya, and now he's coming. And the whole thing will come back. So we should be very careful. And plus, again, it's Krishna. Krishna can manifest through anybody. We are instruments, so Krishna can manifest. If somebody is either is pure or impure, Krishna can manifest. Can touch, anybody can touch people's... Also because, try to understand, when one comes to Krishna consciousness, immediately goes to such a high stage of knowledge that he surpasses everyone. It's very common that devotees happen to, see devotees in book distribution, maybe they never went to school, or they're barely literate, no? But when they speak about philosophy, people ask, oh, have you been to university? No? Do you have a master or PhD? It's happening. Because they speak philosophy that people never heard. the soul, the super soul, the transmigration, the spiritual world. Wow, you like Sanskrit, little Sanskrit. We may say, well, it's a little Sanskrit, but it's more than anybody else knows. Like in India, once Srila Prabhupada was there with one, I think, American devotee. And there was a life member, one Indian gentleman, and so Srila Prabhupada told her, speak in Sanskrit to him. This lady said, Srila Prabhupada, I don't know Sanskrit. And she posted, chant the prayers to the spiritual mass. So she started, samsara davana lalita loka tranaya karina gnanatvam prathasya kalina gunarna vasya vande guru shi charanaravindam. And the man was very impressed. Wow, she speaks Sanskrit. So even the neophyte, in the sense of very new devotee, and even neophyte in the sense not very advanced, they know much more than anybody else. Sometimes they don't know that they know so much, but they know more than anybody else. Okay? Any other question or comment? Yes?
Hey Krishna, do you have to initiate it to arise above neophyte stage?
Huh?
Do you have to initiate it to rise above neophyte stage?
Again, depends what you mean by neophyte. Initiation is an important process. It's recommended. It's very much part of devotional service. One should become initiated. At the same time, it should not be done in an abrupt way or immature way or irresponsible way. So it is certainly a step which is necessary. Srila Rupa Goswami explains, no? Guru Pada Shraya Diksha Guru Rasiban is part of the process to take initiation. And Lord Chaitanya himself explains in Chaitanya Charitamrita that at the time of initiation, Lord Krishna sees the surrendered soul as good as himself. He considers himself on the same level. Considers them part of the family on the same level. So initiation is essential. At the same time, somebody may be very mature, very discriminating, very wise. So in other words, not the neophyte in the sense of immaturity or irresponsible. Somebody can be very steady even before initiation. Somebody takes very seriously, no? Comes with a very wise mood, very steady mood. So you can see he's a serious person. When you talk with him, he's an intelligent person. But certainly that doesn't mean that he doesn't have to take initiation. Sometimes non-initiated people are more mature than initiated people. You follow? It's a fact, no? Sometimes you talk to somebody who's not initiated, but he's more balanced, he's more... Depends who you are. So you come with a certain experience, and you're still a soul, even if you're initiated, you know? If you're serious in spiritual life, even if you're wise and mature, you will take initiation. It's part of the process. But at the same time, we cannot really discriminate about people's potential because they're not initiated. Srila Prabhupada, there's a letter, very interesting letter. He writes to one young man who was not initiated, and he was still eating meat. And he writes to him, because he was working as a marketing expert, he writes this letter to this person, and he says, look, I have, why don't you help me distributing books all over the world? And he speaks very practically. He says, I need to give $2,500 to New Vrindavan. I had to pay the publishers in Japan $3,000. So, can you help me distributing my books? And then in the same letter, he says, you are asking me if you can have an altar in your home. And he said, you should not have an altar because you're still eating meat. But he was engaging him in devotional service, very serious devotional service, very intimate devotional service. This is with his books. And yet this boy was still eating meat. Now that boy grew up, got initiated, and is a sannyasi, is a guru, and is a BBT trustee. But Srila Prabhupada was engaging him in the book distribution and assisting him in big publication even before he was even vegetarian. And sometimes that's a secret of people advancing. You give them something to do. You engage them. That's what it connects. That's what it purifies. That's what gives them interest, taste in the chanting. So we shouldn't be, what do you call, writing people off because what they are now. That's external. They're already souls, they're still souls, and they can be engaged. They can be engaged. Okay, so if there's nothing else, I thank you very much for your attention. And have a great Sunday in general. And Vantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Nitai Gaur Premanandi.